Howdy, folks. You just found the Jopy Cast. Howdy and welcome to episode number one of the Jopy Cast. Today is Friday, December 30th, 2005. I'm your host, Joe Fitzpatrick, otherwise known as Jopy. The Jopy Cast is your resource for news, interviews, and reviews of the Western Mass music scene. Today, my special guest is Peter Jones. Welcome.
Hey, Fitz.
Thanks so much for coming to the opening Jopy Cast. And I always like to start off by getting my guess just a little bit lubed up and having a couple beers. So what are you drinking today?
Seem to have a Harpoon winter warmer.
And what do you think of that winter warmer?
It's not bad. It's how does it say beer? It's got spikes added. Oh, spices. They're not spikes, they're spices.
Spices are always good.
Yep, it's got that cinnamon flavor, something to that effect.
Yeah, a little nutmeg maybe.
Yeah,
very nice. I'm trying the old Smutty Nose IPA that I believe you brought over for me.
Yes, I did for Christmas.
And I got to say, I love the bite I get at the end of it.
Yep, it's very, yeah.
Very nice. Thank heavens it's after 12 noon because it is just a little bit early for beers, but I am enjoying it.
Yeah, it's the holidays, Fitz.
That's right.
Happy New Year.
That's right. Once again, I want to thank you for coming, and I'd like to start off by playing some music of yours. Can you tell us what we're going to listen to first?
I think the first cut we're going to hear is from an album called Three Characters. The piece is called Field, and I chose this one because it has a very nice layered groove in 7, and this is all overdubbed music. I'm playing every part on this, and it's just got a very solid groove. That's why I chose it.
Great. Let's take a listen. I can see what you mean by multiple textures there. It's beautiful, beautiful sound.
Yeah.
I got a couple quick questions. Can you help our listeners who may not be that adept about what 7 is? Can you explain what 7 is and maybe even while this music is playing?
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, this is a piece in 7, meaning that in this case, it's considered an odd meter, obviously, but we're grouping. Check it out. Here comes the break coming up. We'll listen to the break, and then I'll count it with it. Here's a pause. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2 was one way to feel it, or simply in 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2. But I'm feeling it in groups, two groups of two, and then a group of 1, 3. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1. So it's a simplistic way, but I find that that is the easiest way to bring people into the groove, you know. So it's a beautiful thing because of the 2, 2, and 3. Yeah.
Wonderful. And when you say you played all the parts,
yeah,
what does that mean?
Well, you know, it's the old, you know, Stevie Wonder thing that he did, you know, which is to go in and play all the instruments himself. And I don't liken myself to Stevie, but it's just the concept anyways. And you start from, it's like building a building. You start from the beginning with the most basic percussion parts and the fundamental parts that are going to be the solid base of the tune. And then from there you build up, and the last things to go on, you hear the little high melody notes. I'm plucking piano strings in that. That would be the last thing that would have been done. You know, sort of like build from the lowest, and then the highest parts are usually the last, the melody essentially.
Right. And can I ask where this was recorded?
This is recorded at Signature Sounds, Mark Thayer's studio in Palmer, but I have heard that he has moved. I don't know if you've heard this.
I have heard that.
And I have not been to his new studio. But this particular record I was very happy with because Mark works in a really, I want to use the word organic, I don't know how else to say it, but a lot of wood in his old space. It was up in his old house, and I was focusing on an acoustic record, so there's really no synthesizer in this record.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I mean, what type of person would buy something like this?
Well, I think, as you know, maybe people don't know if they're hearing this, that I work in modern dance, so I do a lot of work with choreographers and dancers, and but it's also music that I find that people do buy it just to listen to it as well. It's textural ambient stuff, you know.
I have to say, that particular CD is one of my favorite for doing housework too.
All right.
It energizes me, and it just makes me go. So.
I take that as a compliment. I have no problem with people doing other things while my CD is playing in their house. If it's playing at all, I'm a happy man.
There you go. Hey, I got a couple of quick questions about you.
All right.
Your high school, where did you graduate high school?
I grew up in Greenfield, Mass, and fortunately, I grew up in a musical family, although no one continues to play to this day, except for my brother, who lives in Mexico, who still plays his trombone, which is great. But Greenfield, at that time in the 70s, late 70s, had a music director named Cliff Simons, and Greenfield was extremely competitive in those days because of him. And we went to all the Western Mass competitions and the state competitions. And so it was Greenfield High, and I had a great jazz education there, which I was very fortunate to have that. Yeah.
Yep. And then college?
College was a bit of a mishmash of experiences. I went to Greenfield Community College for a year, and I just decided, I was just going to school because I, you know, it was the thing to do. And I ended up just playing for a couple more years. And then I searched out some teachers. I went out west and went and lived in Colorado and studied at a Buddhist college called the Naropa Institute. Yet there was this guy there, Bill Douglas, who used to, he was a chair of CalArts, and he was a rhythmic master, and I think I owe a lot to him, Bill Douglas. Then I ended up coming back. I ended up getting a BA at UMass in anthropology and music, since I was teaching in college, I felt I should at least have an undergraduate degree, you know.
Right.
So.
And gigs, what do you do for a living?
Well, my main gig is teaching and playing at Mount Holyoke, my college gig, but then I do a lot of outside work with choreographers, performing, writing scores. It's a little bit of a lull right now. I've just been touring this piece with my friend Tigger Benford, though, for the past couple of years with the Jane Comfort Company. Sort of a big old myth based on the myth of Persephone. Quite a dramatic piece, but yeah.
And where are those, when you do those types of shows, where are those generally performed?
It's random, but, you know, a lot of times in New York, other, you know, venues, you know, that are big theater, we're always, the musicians are in the pit, you know, that type of thing.
Right. Can I ask you about your first gig?
Yes. Let's see. Well, the most memorable first gig that I have was in high school, and it was one of those graduation party things for a high school kid. And we had I think it was a jazz. It was obviously a jazz quartet. I'm trying to remember if it was a quartet or a quintet. But we had an alto player. His name was Donnie Morse. I think he was a good player. But the killer thing was about this gig was that it was graduation gig, and everybody's parents, for some reason, were gone. And we all had to rent a car in order to play the gig. And the thing was, the gig, of course, was only paying like 35 or 40 bucks. I can't remember, 50 bucks even. And the rental car was like 20 bucks more than the gig. So we all had to chip in $5 to play the gig. So
I've been there.
Never forgot the true, you know, beginnings of the professional life. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite gig besides that one, or like a?
I think my most favorite gig was about 2000, and I have a lot of favorite gigs in the dance world, but this was with the singer Philip Hamilton. It was Central Park Summer Stage, I think 2002, summer of, and I've worked with this guy a lot, and I don't know where his career is at now. He's a tremendous musician and great friend, but at this time his career was really taken off, and just to be in the band and to see him, you know, have 2,000 people in the audience and see the skyline of New York, and a storm was brewing too. So that was a great gig to be on stage for that. Yeah.
And do you have a gig you wish you could forget?
Yes. I work with dancers in improvisational settings a fair amount. Not so much these last year or so. About 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, in a freezing cold January day in Boston. This dancer that I love, and this is nothing against him, this guy Andrew Harwood from Montreal, but a musician named Mike Vargas and myself were playing, and this guy was improvising, and in the middle of the piece, he told us in the pre-show, in the warm-up, that he was going to tie us up in this big, thick rope, and he proceeded to do so in the context of the concert, and it was one of those moments that it just did not fly with the audience, and I think they got uncomfortable, and meanwhile, myself and Mr. Vargas were wrapped up in this huge rope and in front of people, which we had to then take off. We were fully clothed though, so that was good.
You've been in rope before and not being fully clothed?
I won't say I can't answer that question.
Hey, let's listen to a little bit more of your music. Tell me what we're gonna hear.
Okay, this is actually, you're playing traps on this, and this is Gradual Motion 2. Gradual Motion, that was the first modern dance sort of release. This is Gradual Motion 2. It's a follow-up. Most of the original tracks for this were recorded between 89 and 93. Then I came here, and we took those mastered tracks, and then you laid drum tracks on it. And also a great singer named Stephen Kowalczyk, who I met years ago at UMass, he's in New York now, is singing on this. And he and I just created this spontaneously, the original tracks in the studio, then everything else was layered on top of it.
Great. Peter Jones from Gradual Motion 2.
go. Stevie's doing his thing. He's about to really take off. And, yeah, this is the concept here is to have very few chord changes, not too many, anyways. It doesn't have to be few, but and that the groove is solid. It doesn't really alter. The dancers really dig that, you know. But this is a bit. Here goes Stevie. Check this. How he holds his note right here. Still going.
Reminds me of college when I could hold my breath that long.
Right? This guy's got some lungs. So, you know, and he was completely improvising. I gave him the chord changes. And so I haven't gotten this to him yet. So, Stevie, if you hear this, I owe this to you. I know. Yeah.
Cool. It's beautiful. Let me just give you a final couple questions here.
Okay.
Can you listen to this in the background?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell me, like, your top musical influences?
Well, certainly as a keyboard player growing up when I did, which is the 60s and 70s, Chick Corea was first. And Herbie, of course, Herbie Hancock, Keith Jarrett. You know, as a young keyboard player growing up, well, you know, as soon as I heard those guys, it just was so clear to me that, you know, the potential of the instrument, but more so just, wow, having your butt kicked like that. And still, you know, it's funny because I'm listening to old Chick and Herbie again from the 70s, and it still is just kicking my butt in the greatest of ways, you know.
Yep.
Just inspiring, you know. But then I'm a bit of a weird trip because I think I've always been a hybrid musician, and I, you know, I got turned off by jazz because of, not turned off, but I just wasn't a traditional jazz player. I was much more a fusion guy, and I think that's spawned me and spurred me into classical music and studying composition and stuff, you know. So, yeah.
Do you have any personal influences, not necessarily musical?
Well, certainly, you know, my friends, I have a good friend out in California who's he's a real Renaissance man. I was the best man at his wedding last year. So he's just, you know, the guy's a pilot. He's a fiddler. He's a square dance caller. He's a master builder, spiritual friend, you know. And just, you know, my folks, my folks are still around. So I really look up to them a lot, you know.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Do you have any hopes for your own musical future?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been teaching for a long time, and my CDs are out there in the world, and I'm happy about that. But I definitely would, I think I'd like to push into film scoring if I could somehow, you know, a bit more composing again, perhaps, you know.
Great.
Yeah.
And we got time for one more piece of music. What are we going to listen to?
All right, this is where it all began. This is a piece called Ode to Winslow. It's a little piano piece. It's only a minute and 20 seconds long. But in this piece, I wrote it when I was 21. It was at a pivotal time, I think, in anybody's young life when they're trying to figure out how they're going to proceed as a musician, as a, you know, whatever you're pursuing. And but this piece, I don't really like to get into narratives and it means this or that, but I had been in a relationship with a much older woman, and she basically said, look, buddy, you got to go on with your life and you got to focus on your music. And I remember I got kind of sick and this little piece came out, and it's harmonically, I still think it may be the, you know, I have these little short pieces, they're like haikus. I think they may be perhaps the best things I'll ever do in my life. So,
wow. All right.
There you go.
And what CD does this come from?
Oh, it's from a solo piano disc called Skeletons.
Great.
Yeah.
Peter Jones from the CD Skeletons. Thank you. Wow. All right. Well, thank you so much, Peter. That was truly moving. I'm going to put Peter on the spot now and do a little thing I like to call gigs you can't miss. Here's some gigs that are coming up in the next week that you're going to want to go to.
Okay, here we go. Happy New Year, everybody. On Thursday, January 5th at the Iron Horse in sunny Northampton, The Man Comes Around, a Johnny Cash tribute featuring the Lonesome Brothers, Matthew Hebert, Kevin O'Rourke of Lo Fine,
wow.
Eric Allen,
no.
Anais Mitchell,
holy
Bob Hennessy, Stuart James, Frank Padalero, Kevin Colgan, and Robin Lane.
Wow.
Would that be Robin Lane of
The Chair Buster?
Yeah.
I do not know.
Huh. Friday, January 6th, Chris Paquette is bluesing it up at Theodore's in Springfield. Or check out Hot Black, the Shenanigans Justice League, which, well, are at and anything thereafter at the 11s in Northampton, Mass. And that's on Friday, January 6th. Saturday, January 7th, Count West West Hymns and Ryan Power will be making a noise at the Brass Cat, East Hampton.
Very good.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Peter. Be sure to check out the webpage. That's jopey.com, J-O-P-E-Y.com. And once again, I'd like to say a big thanks to Peter Jones for coming out and talking to us today. And thanks again to all of you for listening. Feel free to email me with your upcoming gigs. That email address is jopeycast, J-O-P-E-Y-C-A-S-T, @gmail.com. And also, I'm looking for musicians and or bands to come on the show, so please drop me a line and let's set that up. I'm going to send you out with a little something from the Peter Jones Duo. This is actually something Peter and I did a couple years back here at Jopey Studios. Thanks again for listening. Tell your friends. Smell you later.